Yes.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, November 23rd, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And that's bring4th.org. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim. Been a couple of weeks. How are you doing? How was your trip?
Absolutely fantastic. Just loved it. Loved it to death. Had the best time. Jim, why don't you tell them I'm a little bit verbose.
It went much better than I thought it would because we haven't done any traveling since Carla had her surgery, and this is our first trip out. And dealing with airplanes and seating and boarding and all of that, it provided challenges. But there was a lot of help available, and things went well. The people on the other end in Philadelphia were very accommodating, and the motel room was handy with a hospital bed and a bedside commode, and everybody was very understanding and helpful, and we just felt like there were angels around us helping us out.
Wonderful. And how about the event itself?
Yeah, tell him about that. He was so freaked out about whether I was going to make it. Why don't you tell him what all we did, Mick?
Well, I mentioned a little bit earlier to Monica, but the first night there was a welcome dinner at a winery, and lots of side dishes for the meal. Delicious vegetable dishes and a whole table full of desserts and a lot of people that we hadn't seen for a while. We got to see Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who does the regressions, UFO contactees for years and years in Laramie, Wyoming. We got to see David Wilcock, and we got to meet Larry Frischella and his brother and wife, and got to meet some really fine people, so that was a nice thing. Saturday was the day for rest for us. They had other activities going around to visit New Hope and sightsee, but we decided to take time to get Carla rested up. And that evening, we had an evening at the Fuge, which is, as I mentioned to Monica, is short for centrifuge, the place where the astronauts trained 40 and 50 years ago. This centrifuge was actually in the room we were in, and apparently this thing traveled at 43 revolutions per minute, with the capsule containing the astronauts turning in two different directions at the same time. I have a hunch there was a lot of cleanup after some of those trips. But we had a great time answering questions. The questions were asked during the meal that was served in courses, and anytime somebody raised their hand in the audience and wanted to answer a question of a spiritual nature, then a cameraman and two light guys came over and a lady with a microphone, and you were on the jumbotron behind the podium about 30 feet by 50 feet tall. So Carla was specifically asked a question, which was unusual. Only Carla and Leo were asked questions by Larry, and not just having the questions thrown out into the audience, let anybody answer them. He asked Carla to answer what was the difference between consciousness and the soul, and I thought her answer was particularly illuminating. And we were there, I guess, 4 or 5 hours. It was a long night, a lot of slow eating, and lots of desserts afterwards. And that was pretty much it.
Not quite it. At 5 o'clock in the morning, I turn on my computer because I'm having trouble sleeping, and I just look at see what's come in the email, and Larry has written it and says, "Are you up?" So I wrote back in and said, "Yeah, I'm up. Come on over."
He hadn't slept
all
night.
Yeah, he was up for the night. He was jazzed.
This is the guy that put the whole event on.
And so he came over and brought. He had said, "What do you want? Anything to eat or drink?" And I said, "Well, just bring some apple juice because I like apple juice." And he brought a gallon of it. We're going to put one of those containers up with our, you know, memories of famous things that we've been through in our life. We've got a couple of wine bottles and stuff. We're putting that apple juice container up there right with them. Anyway, Larry's question was very simple. He said, I want to spend my money well. I'm determined to spend it for the good of the planet. He said, what do I bet on? That I can help by, you know, backing science and technology, or that I can help by backing spirituality? And so, you know, we started talking about that, and we were still talking about it, of course, at 8 o'clock. And we've got a lot more to talk through. And, you know, my own personal opinion is that you can't help the planet by doing anything. You can't make people come up to the mark. No matter how easy you make things for people, some people will think that everything's horrible. And so much for science and technology. And no matter how much you offer spirituality to people, how you offer it, who offers it, et cetera, there will be lots of people that simply aren't ready yet. It's a matter of having a time when you're set. Your body, your mind, your spirit is set to wake up and move on and, you know, evolve. And everybody's set differently. And the people that are waking up and happen to find our stuff helpful, well, by golly, they think it's wonderful. Larry thinks the whole planet should have a copy of, you know, the Law of One material. But you can put it in lots of people's hands, but that doesn't mean that they're going to read it. It's sort of you know, you can send a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. 9 out of 10 people are going to look at it, and it's just not going to be for them. And that it does not mean that they're stupid or dumb. It just means that they are not where this material is. And so maybe they're going to be in third density a while yet. And, you know, your heart goes out to people that are in third density. But if they like it, if they're, you know, still enjoying it and don't want to move on, well, what's the problem, really? So it was kind of hard to answer Larry's question, which was basically, what next? You know, he did this one thing, and then what do you do next? How do you help? You know, he was already looking forward. Larry makes things happen. He was already looking forward to what he was going to do for the next event. I basically ended up suggesting a couple of different things. Number one, we could take the people that he liked the most out of all the people that were there and move forward with the same kind of questions, but with more focused questions and with fewer people, and really get a conversation going that would end up being viral, because we had people there that were from all walks of life that just happened to be working on consciousness. You know, they're as doctors, they're as scientists, they're as tech people, they're as spiritual, all different kinds of spirituality. So, you know, what would get people's interest, I think, is the fact that different people are coming together to promote certain ideas that are fundamental between the two disciplines. And I suggested that. And then I also suggested that, you know, we could try to bring groups together, you know, bringing together the spiritual community with the religious communities of various religions for one item, you know, maybe two items a year, that we just really, really, really said, let's do this, let's meditate on this day, enlighten the planet and be conscious about it and really, really get a whole big light bulb going here. So those were the two things I came up with so far, and I've been praying about it ever since. Hopefully all of us will be able to evolve into better ideas as we go along. Anyway, it was wonderful, and I'm not saying that I enjoyed, you know, being away from the bathroom, but I will say this, both times airlines put us up at the front of the plane, and when Jim explained my problem, they immediately cleared away the seats by the John in the back of the plane. They didn't want to have me struggling to get all the way down the plane to the bathroom. So they were very nice, and as Jim said, we had angels all the way.
Well, great. Sounds like you had a wonderful time. Is this material going to be made available to the public?
Well,
I
think so. I asked if they were going to do that, and I'm going to follow up and write Larry a little note and say that I'll edit it if he'll get it to me, you know, if he'll get transcriptions of it to me, that I'll do the editing.
Okay.
And put that out. So, yeah, I had my eye on that one right from the very beginning.
Okay, well, great. I'm glad you're back, and I hope you had a happy holiday yesterday as well. It's just been a good couple of weeks off there for you.
It has been wonderful. Have you ever tried to have Thanksgiving with a vegetarian?
For 30 years, I think you have.
For the past 30 years, we've had vegetarian Thanksgivings and Christmas.
Have you ever made a turkey?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Did y'all make one yesterday?
No, we didn't go that far.
I didn't know. Uh-huh. He hasn't understood tofu yet. I've got to help him into that one yet. But he had a lovely stuffed pepper, and Melissa and I shared a roasted chicken that had wandered freely the whole of its entire life, and it was a happy chicken. And when it died, we got it.
Uh-huh.
So it was delightful for all concerned, and in between football and naturally,
okay,
the best of NCIS. It couldn't have been better.
Okay. Well, if you ever want some tofurkey tips, let me know.
I do. I was looking at making it, and then I thought, no, I just can't see it this year. Maybe next.
Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely want some tips.
We don't always.
You're the one to ask.
Okay. We don't always do the tofurkey, but it comes in handy if you kind of want something that kind of looks like a turkey,
kind of, sort of.
You know, the texture and everything. It's pretty good fake, but yeah, it works. And you do a lot of other stuff with it. So anyway, all right. Well, I'm glad you guys had a great time. I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff. This is from Kuo from May 13th, 1987. And let's see, I want to make sure I got the right one pulled up. Yep, that's the right one. Okay. After a few months of care, one can begin to see a pattern, an ebb and flow. One begins to see the true signs of seasons and of seasons change when that does occur. The basic responsibility of third density humankind is to observe this process and gradually to become aware enough of the preferred reactions to the various spontaneous seasons that one may illuminate and elucidate and then soften the blow of the difficult wintry times, and then that one may celebrate and share those seasons which are prosperous, blooming, and bursting with fruit. There is always a balance in spiritual excellence, not a leaning in one direction to the exclusion of another, but the balancing of the polar opposites, which are both excellence, but which apart from each other do not create or sustain the consciousness of love. We could say to you, allow the flow of events to control you always and be giving excellent advice. And just as well could we say, use more discipline and meditate more during each day. Both of these things are true in their season, and when the urge comes upon you to meditate more, to use more discipline, and so forth, we suggest that by all means you follow your own intuition. Yet, if more than one circumstance seems to be echoing to you, saying to you, or indicating to you that there is too much discipline and control in the life, listen to that intuition. The basic question here is a question of the trust which you have in the Creator and in yourself as a part of the Creator, which knows more than any outside source, including us, what is needed at the present moment. If you are ever to see life in third density as a unified and meaningful experience, you will see it as a creation of ultimate subtlety and yet startling simplicity, in which, born upon the water of the Spirit, the frail barks of humankind sail about, some with rudders, some without, in search of many grails, many islands, many native homes. Some wish to go away from everything, some wish to go to the heart of everything, and to each his or her own journey.
Thank you, Monica. This session appealed to me as I was watching the leaves finally fall and the trees beginning to be their stark winter selves. It always is a sad season for me. Most people love the season of autumn. But to me, it is a precursor of a kind of death each year. And I wasn't really having great success in how to think about that. And this session helped me a great deal. So I took the trouble thinking about it to look up what would happen to a tree if it didn't lose its leaves, and discovered to my surprise that it would die. For one thing, if the tree kept its leaves, the winter temperatures would eventually freeze them off the tree. So they couldn't stay all winter even if they wanted to. And meanwhile, the food that the tree was taking in from ever less leaves would be going to keep those leaves going rather than going into the heart of the tree to store up food for the next seasons. So without any food, the tree itself would die. So a lot of times in our lives, I think when you're going through a winter and you're looking at yourself without leaves, that's sort of the way it feels. You have been a beautiful tree with wonderful leaves and trees nesting in your branches and birds singing their songs. And all of a sudden, you're a winter tree. You're going through the winter of the heart. You've lost something. You've lost your health. You've lost your husband or wife. You've lost your lover. You've lost your best friend. You've lost your job. You don't know how to pay for next month's rent. There are so many ways that you can suddenly feel like you're going through a winter. And you wonder, why is this necessary? And the answer that this reading suggests is simply that if we trust in ourselves and we trust in the Creator, we have to trust that these times are necessary for our larger life, not for the beauty of our leaves, but for the health and strength of our essence. And sometimes these things can seem extreme. I think you often feel that winter is never going to end. I certainly do. You know, around February the 15th, you think, it will never, ever end. Nothing will ever grow in this horribly maimed earth. You know, it's all icy and forbidding. But it does, of course. It does end, and things grow again. And the miracle happens once again, and it just warms the heart as well as warming your body. Oh, how wonderful spring is to me. I love the very beginning of spring when you're just seeing the wet patches emerge from snow, you know, the snow being all over the place, and suddenly it's not everywhere. It's melted actually down to the ground, and you can see that. When I was away at school in Massachusetts, was the first year in my life that I'd ever been in an environment where the snow lay on the ground the whole year, you know, the whole winter time. You never saw the ground from the beginning of the snowfall until sometime in end of March to beginning of April. And, oh, my goodness, how wonderful it was to see that. And I always think of that time as the obvious time when the earth is weeping with the effort of giving birth. You know, the mud is on the ground instead of being grassy and happy. You know, it's still giving birth to the grass, giving birth to the little flowers, the wildflowers, and the flowers we plant. Jim's just gone through, I guess, about a month of planting. And we love all kinds of bulbs, from the little bluebells you can plant in forest land to, you know, the usual tulips and daffodils and so forth. And how wonderful it to prepare that and lay up those treasures for the springtime. But it's so hard to have trust. It seems that it's never going to end when it's wintertime. And I think that we need to hold to ourselves that knowledge of the inevitability of change and the rightness and the balance of it, so that we can meditate not on why has God been so cruel to us, but what are we balancing, and what is our best way to get behind that balancing effort and do our part so that it's not necessary for us to languish in winter too long. Some wish to go away from everything, says this little reading. Some wish to go to the heart of everything. But you know, when you go away from everything, you're still at the heart of everything, because the heart of everything is within you. So there's no one way to handle this. It's easy for me to say, well, go within. You know, if you're having a really hard time, go within and practice those disciplines that you've learned are helpful. I've learned that the simple act of giving thanks, if I start giving thanks for the things that are still going on in my life that are good, you know, I give thanks for my husband, I give thanks for good work to do, give thanks for somebody that has sent me a thank you card, and I'm looking at the card right now, you know, get into the moment and give thanks, and just keep on looking around at the stuff that we can give thanks for. And gradually, you'll discover that you're in a completely other mood. You're in a completely other frame of mind, and your vibrations are different. And yes, it's artificial in that you determined to do this for yourself. But no, it is not artificial. No, you did this, and yes, it happened. And you do this enough, and you begin to realize that you like it when you do it. You like the way you feel after you've applied some discipline and worked with gratitude for a while and really given thanks for all the blessings in your life. So I wanted to share that because I know I'm not the only one that looks at the leaves falling down and the tree's skeletons emerging and thinking, oh dear, oh my, the ice and the snow. Oh my, it's so long until we see the first blossoms of spring. But it's not very long, actually. It's not very long at all. So until then, let us be masters of our own ship and go just the way we want on our journeys together. And may those journeys be a journey in love, in common love together.
With the metaphor of the earth seasons, we know that spring always follows winter. Is that also true with ourselves? How do we know and trust that there will be a spring for someone who is in a very bleak place and it feels that they're at rock bottom? How do they know that there will definitely be a spring?
Well, I think that takes trust. I think that takes a whole lot of trust. My first thought on that, and I don't know if it's right or not, is that if it's so bleak that there's no getting beyond it, if a person is, for instance, on his deathbed and is convinced that his life is going to be bleak and that there's no way, there's nothing left in his life for which to give thanks, that may be true, but you know, when he dies, everything is going to be so different. And it will be so much better, and he will be involved with the people he loves the most, and he will be working to heal himself from this incarnation. The things that people suffer so much from here in this incarnation, if it has gotten beyond them and they really can't work anymore with it, what they need to work with then is just to think about how things are going to be when they are in larger life and when their higher selves are there, and whatever entities that mean something to them are there, whether it's, you know, the wife that died before them, or whether it's Jesus, or whether it's the angels, or whatever, you know, your feelings are about the things that are most important to you and that bring you the most joy, there they will be, and there they will be, and until the healing has completely happened, and you are completely in the balanced state from which you can go forth to gain other experiences and have another incarnation. Jim, what do you think about that?
I think your suggestion that faith is a necessary ingredient here is probably the best concept to grab hold of, because I think what we fear in any situation that's difficult for us to get through, if it's a winter of our soul and we're wondering if we're going to survive, if we're going to bloom, if we're going to be able to move forward, we're moving into new territory. We haven't been there before, and we usually have apprehension or even fear of the unknown. And once we can open ourselves in faith to accept whatever is coming our way and to see it as a blessing that will eventually help make us better and stronger and brighter and more loving, then I think we've prepared ourselves to enter into a new exploration, a new phase. And once we get there, then it will become like a nourishment for us, a food, a treasure, a blessing. And when we can go through a couple of those experiences in our lives, then we gain a confidence, a kind of a spiritual confidence that will see us through further ones. So what we really have to do is, just like you said, develop this faith that all will be well, because all is well. We are one with everything, and everything happens for a very good reason. And we probably have taken part in planning this before the incarnation, so we just have to have faith in our own planning and faith in the beneficence of the universe and a loving creator.
And also, something that I forgot to mention when I was thinking about my own situation, when I was in the worst state of mind of my whole life, one that had gotten beyond me, it was when my beloved companion Don died. This is back in 84, and he committed suicide. And, you know, I think when people commit suicide, the people closest to them are always completely overwhelmed by the question of what could I have done? What could I have said, or what could I have not said? How could I have helped? How could I have done anything differently that would have, you know, kept him alive? And I couldn't handle it. I felt so guilty. I felt as though I should commit suicide just so that I would be properly judged, because I felt that, like I killed him, you know. And, of course, these were all thoughts that were very wrong. And, you know, I knew that they were not accurate, but that's the way it felt. That's the way it felt to me. So I am happy to say that I asked for help and I got it. I had a wonderful therapist for about 5 years, and she was a Jungian. She loved to work with my dreams. And while I was in that state of mind, there was someone I could talk to that was trained to help me see things from all angles and to help me begin to be more of myself and have more of myself on board and not just these overwhelmed feelings. And when I got to the point where I could think about the situation back in 84 without going back into it and having all those emotions wash over me once again, I knew that I was over the worst of it, and I stopped going to therapy because, you know, I was able to run my own boat at that point. You know, I didn't, when I would go back, I would think about it, but I wouldn't be into it. I wouldn't go into all the feelings anymore. So that said that I had enough health and I had enough strength that I didn't need a therapist, and I didn't. You know, it worked out great. And I think there's always that hope if you're working with something and you really can't find a way. You need to look really carefully around you and just ask people, you know, have you had a therapist, and how did that therapist work, and what did you think about it, and so forth, until you find somebody that you think will be compatible with you, because there are all kinds of therapists, and it would be a tragedy if you went and got therapy only to find out that this therapist couldn't help you and indeed might even make you feel worse. I've heard of people telling me that.
So if you think
that's
there's
one
a...
thing.
Go ahead.
I just said that's one thing that I didn't say. And that,
okay.
That does give you hope when you actually don't really have hope yourself.
Since there's so many different types of therapies, do you think there's a pretty common ingredient or a particular quality to look for? Like, what I'm wondering is, at what point or what prompted you to finally get to that point where you could think about what happened without being overwhelmed by emotion? That had to happen at some point. Was there something that triggered that?
There was something that triggered it. I was trying to keep up with everything. I think it was in November, close to this time of year, and I picked up a piece of paper that I had forgotten that I'd written, and I discovered it was a Christmas letter. We always send a Christmas letter out with our card, and I love getting the same Christmas letters, you know, from other people, find out how they're doing, because there are a lot of people you just don't hear from except at Christmas time, and it's so good to catch up. And so I'd written it, and I read it through, and I thought to myself, you know, I like this person. And that person was me. I fell in love with myself all over again that day. And it was a wonderful thing. A wonderful thing just to like myself. Just to like myself. Because I had disliked myself and, you know, hated myself because I hadn't been successful in keeping Don from suicide. And I had been made to see, in the fullness of time, working with a therapist, that when people go towards suicide, there's nothing you can do. Is that there's a point from which you can't pull them back. And I had no idea. Jim had more idea than I did, because Don talked to him and said, you know, this and that, that I didn't hear about, I didn't know about. And everybody was keeping that kind of despair from me. So it came as more of a shock to me than I think to Jim. But at any rate, it wouldn't have helped no matter what we would have done. At some point, Don was needed to leave this world. He was just too wounded to stay.
Key phrase you just said there, at some point. So apparently when they get to a certain point, there might not be anything anyone can do. And yet we've all heard stories of people who maybe toyed with the idea of suicide, maybe not seriously, but it entered their mind, or maybe they even attempted it. I mean, I have a sister that tried to commit suicide 4 times.
Oh my.
And she didn't succeed, and that was 40 years ago. I mean, she's
so you
probably
asked yourself, was she wanting to get out of it, or was she asking for attention?
Exactly. She was actually looking for help. So sometimes we can't tell the difference, I guess. You know, we don't
right.
know which it is. And that leads us to our first question tonight, which I didn't even send you, Carla, because it came in later this afternoon after I had sent you the email. But I went ahead and bumped it to number one because it seemed a little more urgent. And this is on the topic of suicide. This is from Cyan. Cyan says, a friend of mine with a bit of a sad history recently attempted suicide and doesn't want to confess that she chickened out at the last minute, but told so to me. The friend is taken care of as good as the situation allows, but I would wish for some thoughts on the concept of suicide, and if you have any messages to her specifically by name, it would be helpful, as it might convince her that dying is not required for the skills and balance in life she wants to attain. Please refer to her by the name Adelheid or Adelheid, I'm not sure which, A-D-E-L-H-E-I-D, Adelheid maybe, as it is obscure enough to make her identity both secret and non-secret, allow it to be channeled to her and not her. Thank you.
Okay, well, I guess a lot of the things that I said about suicide are looked at from the point of the person that suffers because of somebody else committing suicide. And let me say from the heart that if Don had ever known how much it would destroy my life and Jim's and the other people who loved him so dearly, he would never have done it. I think that this is one case in which communication is everything. You get to the point where nothing will help when you have been out of communication for so long that the only thoughts running around in your head are your thoughts, and they're all skewed because it's crazy to want to commit suicide. In fact, Don's suicide was put down as homicide because in the eye of the police, having, you know, taken their bid from the best that psychology has to offer, anybody that commits suicide is actually crazy, and the hand that pulls the trigger or whatever is not his own hand. It's the hand of the illness that he has become addicted to. So that's the first thing I would say, is keep talking. Do not try to handle things on your own. if you don't have, you know, best friends or mates that, that are able to bear this burden with you, then go straight for a therapist and really get involved in your own health and wellness. The thing that most people think is, it's no good, somebody shoot me, there's nothing I can do that's right, and I've been there. I mean, I was thinking suicidal thoughts for 6 solid years after Don died because I couldn't stand the thought that I hadn't been able to keep him alive. And nobody wants to do that to the people that they love. So I think the first thing for anybody that's thinking about suicide to be aware of is that it is a bomb that will go off in all of the people's experiences that they know well. And they will be the ones that set it off. And as I said, I don't think anybody really wants to do that. They don't want people to suffer because they've suffered. So the thing to do is not let it get to that point. And you don't let it get to that point only if you just keep talking. If you talk to a therapist, if you talk to a minister, if you join a 12-step program, if somehow an addiction of some kind is involved in your feelings of suicide, find a peer group, find a therapist, find someone to talk to. And if you are in the way of being the best friend of that person, make sure that you're available more so than you would normally be, you know, any hour of the day or night. the most despairing times for people that are feeling bad are, of course, 2, 3 in the morning. And that's hard to deal with if you want to get a good night's sleep. But on the other hand, you'd rather help this person than get a good night's sleep. So you just have to roll up your sleeves and prepare to help. And sometimes you it seems like you're getting bopped on the bean for being of that good help, but that's really not true. You are indeed helping. I'm not saying you should be assisting a person in an addiction. For that, you need to send a person to a 12-step program because, again, you as a lay person are not equipped to talk turkey to somebody that's got an addiction because people that aren't addicted just can't understand what's going on. They think, oh, well, you could quit if you thought you could. But no, the addiction's got you, and the addiction is running your life. So in order to get yourself back so that you're in the saddle and not whatever addiction it is that's running you, you have to have a lot of peer group pressure. And my mother is a good example of this. As long as she would not go to AA, she kept doing what they called slipping. As soon as she got to AA, and this was after about 20 years of struggling on her own, she stayed sober. And she stayed sober for that point until she died. And she was wonderful, and she was, you know, she'd learned from this experience, and she came back, and she was better than ever. And such a joy to be with, and we had a wonderful time together, my mom and me, after she got sober again. So, you know, look at the kind of help that you can do. Look at what might be the downside of helping, like assisting a person in an addiction, and don't choose to do that. Choose rather to guide them strongly and quickly to a 12-step program where they will be able to talk to people that know exactly what they're going through and are able to say, I have been there, and look at me now. You know, I am okay. It's very important for a person to hear that. But just stay there and be in love. Rest in love as you talk to this person so that all the unseen help can flow through you and that person can feel surrounded with love. Nikki, what comes to you as you think on this very serious question?
I would just echo your thoughts. You need to get somebody who has a really an overview, a professional point of view that knows what's happening in a person's mind when they're thinking about suicide. We there are times when we all need help, and there's nothing wrong with needing help. That's what we're all here for. We're here to lend a hand and to help each other through these situations. And that's all I could say is just get some help and make the effort.
Okay, excellent. I sure hope things work out for your friend, Cyan. Thank you for the question, and please do keep us posted. Let us know what happens there, if we can address another angle to this and on another day. Go ahead.
I said yes, okay. Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go to another question that just actually came in today also. And earlier you mentioned that you worked with a therapist who did a lot of dream work with you and helped you work on that level. So this has to do with dreams. And here's the question. If we had an emotional karmic entanglement with someone, a relationship with someone, can they infiltrate our dreams? How do we know if the dream is positive and constructive, like working out issues on a soul level, or negative and destructive, keeping the entanglement and avoiding closure? Also, is it possible for someone to steal energy from another person by invading their dreams? I've already done all the usual stuff for protection, but the dreams continue. Thank you. This is from Wendell.
Okay, Wendell. Hey. I was very familiar with keeping a journal of my dreams, and it drove me crazy, actually, because I have it probably is part of the same gift, the same unusual way that I'm structured that makes it possible for me to channel, but when I paid attention to my dreams, all I did all night was write down my dreams. I didn't have one or two a night. I would go to sleep, and in 15 minutes, I would be up writing down a dream, and it would take me somewhere between a half hour and an hour.
Wow.
And then I'd go back to sleep for 15 minutes, and I would wake up with another dream, and I'd be writing for half an hour or an hour, and that would just happen all night. And it was definitely a part of my getting better, but it was hard. It was, you know, for me, and I don't think it's hard for most people. I think most people don't have that instant inroad into their subconscious. I think that channeling is a way of producing or translating stuff that is normally in the subconscious or in the unconscious. And it's, you know, doing that in a conscious manner, bringing it through. And with the dreams, I was bringing through the riches of a very, I think my husband would agree, complex personality with a lot of dark notes and a lot of light notes and you know, a lot of interior balances. And I'm a bozo like anybody else, but there's just a whole lot going on in my mind. I know one person that I worked with in counseling, spiritual counseling, for probably 3 years or so, said I didn't have a stream of consciousness. I had a rushing river of consciousness, or maybe an ocean. So that was hard on me. You know, I really couldn't do the dream journaling. I guess if you wanted to talk about the person in my life that has done the most with dream journaling, it would be David Wilcock. He constantly has kept a record of his dreams since before I knew him. He was in the house here in 2003, maybe, for about a year he was with us, and then for another year he was close to us. And so I can vouch for the fact that, you know, he every day, you know, very steadily, he would write down his dreams, he would think about them, and, you know, do journal about them. So I think the first thing I would say is develop a dream journaling discipline. And here's why. I believe, for the most part, that dreams are very powerfully helpful. And the reason is that everybody in that dream is you, a different aspect of yourself that you're dealing with, having trouble with. And this would go along with the idea that all things are one, and that when you see a person, you're seeing a reflection of yourself. One reflection of yourself, and then you look at the next person, that's also a reflection of yourself. So you have different things to learn from everybody you meet. And it's the same thing in a dream. Whatever is happening in the dream, and no matter how wacky it seems, that person that seems like another self actually is representing something that you're working with in your into your life. And so you have to look, okay, well, now, what was that? You know, how did that person act? How did it make me feel? What would you say is, you know, is that from my shadow side? Is the reason I'm having trouble with my wife because she represents part of my shadow side that I have not yet acknowledged and redeemed and loved and brought into my daylight personality and asked to help me? So that would be the biggest thing that I could say. I think when you begin to journal, it seems very fragmented. But after you've been journaling a while, you begin to develop, I would say, even a geography. You say, oh, I've been in this place before in another dream. And, oh, I remember this. This is from a dream I had before, too. And, you know, you begin to see the pattern and how things repeat. And obviously this is repeating in your life right now a lot. So you need to pay a lot of attention to it. I think that if there were some kind of aggression going on, you'd feel a lot more than just wondering about it because you know it's possible. I think that it's very unlikely that there's anything more than your inner self trying to work out this relationship. And you know, obviously you're trying to preserve what's good about you, but also, you know, it's kind of scary when you look for the first time at something from your shadow side. Now, there's a part of your daylight personality that wants to change the shadow side. And so that shadow side becomes fearful because it feels that it's going to die. So to deal with whatever is shadowy about that side, whatever you think is wrong about you or about the other person, which is the same thing, you need to face it with love and say, I love you. I don't understand exactly why this has come up, but I know that I need to take you to myself and give you a great big hug and tell you that you are part of me and that I will take care of you and I ask you to help me. And you know, be that loving being. A lot of times there are things left over from childhood where we haven't been treated well as a child. And when we try to treat somebody else well, some of this stuff might come forth. And so without knowing anything more about it than that, it comes to me to say that. And you might look at some of those childhood experiences and see if something rings a bell, something that these dreams are trying to help you to remember and to bring up out of the treasures of your forgotten pain into the daylight so that you can work with them. Monica, Jim, you got ideas on this?
Yeah, I do, unless you have something to say, Jim.
No, go ahead.
Well, this reminded me of something that happened to me, gosh, 30-something years ago. I had just gotten dumped by this boyfriend that we'd been together like 3.5 years, and it was really hard for me. And he was the kind of guy where we would just talk for hours sometimes, you know, going through all this drama, you know, working out all these heavy things. And after we split up, it continued, but in my dreams, I would have these long dreams where I felt like I was just having this long conversation with him, like for hours, mm-hmm. it seemed. And this went on for a few months after we split up. And I felt at the time, because I was kind of newly into Casey and stuff like that, that we were really working something out. Like on one level, he was mirroring an aspect of myself, but on another level, we really were connecting in the dream world. And we finally got some closure, but for a while there, I felt like maybe it was because my own desire was to still be with him at the time, but I felt like I was kind of being lied to by the dreams, because in the dreams, things kept working out. We would actually work it out where, oh, we're back together again, and then I would wake up and, oh, no, we're not together. Mm. You know, so it took me a while. It was very confusing. And then I finally got past that. And then like a year later, after I'd gotten married and I hadn't even thought about this guy anymore, I had this dream where he came into my new house where my new husband and I lived and barged in. And I was like, whoa, what was that? And I heard from a friend later that he wanted me back around that time. Uh-huh. And so I couldn't help but wonder if I psychically picked up on something, you know, he was trying to intrude into my life. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember what I did. I think I may have done some prayer or, you know, protection or something. And then it never happened again after that. But I kind of thought
thought of that when I read this question, that he seems to be asking, you know, how do you know the difference? How do you know if you really are working something out with the person in your dream time, or could that person actually be siphoning off energy? Because I know you've heard, like in folklore, this succubus and incubus and all
that stuff.
You know, you've seen it.
I just heard about it. No.
So how do you know?
I was in a meditation group with about 36 of us one time, and I knew that this guy. I mean, Lindy kept telling me he's just sucking my energy. And she was right across the circle from a big, huge circle, took up a whole barn. And I had my eyes open, and I was just watching. And all of a sudden, I saw him fall over. And it was, and she said that was exactly when she mentally took scissors and cut the connection that he was draining her. He was draining off of her. Cut the connection, and he fell over, physically fell over. And it happens to anybody that's in a teaching position, or somebody thinks, gosh, you've really done great work. And sometimes somebody like that has been in a gathering of ours. And I can't really tell who it is most usually, but I can tell when it stops. Because, you know, I can tell somebody has really sucked my energy during that time. And it's really an unfortunate thing that people just sit there and wait for the next pearl that comes out of your mouth, when actually, you know, they probably have a better beat on things than you do. It happens sometimes. And I think that we do work out karmic things with people all the time. But to me, that's great. That's a wonderful thing if we can do that. And it's, you know, I don't feel heavy saying yeah, and I don't feel like it only happens in dreams. I think mostly it happens when you think to yourself, okay, it probably is the working out of karma, and then you say, well, I'm going to work this out, you know, and you turn your mind to it, and at that point you are really doing much better than if you just, you know, sort of fearfully thought, well, maybe it's karma, and sort of shied away from it. You know, don't shy away from it. If you think it is, well, you know, march right in there and see what you can do to make the situation better, balanced.
I remember when I was going through it, towards the end, when I had gotten closure, I felt like, yeah, that was a great dream. We cleared some stuff, and I, you know, in the dream, I was letting him go, telling him goodbye and all that kind of stuff. And I woke up feeling empowered and energized. But I remember in the early days when I had those dreams, I woke up feeling just exhausted and drained, and because it was this letdown. Oh, I'm not really with him, you know. And so I'm wondering, if somebody feels really let down and drained after such a dream, could that be an indication that the person is actually draining their energy? Or could it just be, you know, just nothing to do with that, but just they're just disappointed that it was only a dream or something? Or how do you tell the difference? How do you tell if somebody's draining their energy?
It's hard to tell because so much is unseen. But usually people aren't clever enough or aren't evil enough to mean to do it on purpose. So it's not karmic. You know, it's just happening. It's just randomly happening. I think when there's karma involved, you both feel it, and you both pretty much want to do something about it. So I think probably you probably were somewhat drained by him, but it was your grief draining you, I think, more than anything he was doing on purpose, because you didn't feel badly until you woke up. And when you realize, no, he wasn't there, he had left, then the grief came, and it was very hard to bear. And I've been there, you know. My very first love, he left me 9 days before the wedding day. And for the 3 years after that, I might as well have been a widow, you know, as far as grieving. I grieved constantly, 24/7, for a really long time. Mm. If you're really in love like that, and it only happens like that once, I think. You know, the first cut is the deepest. and, you know, think that guy was the only guy on the planet, then you don't see the point in going on with any other guy. He was the only one, you know. He pretty much summed up the species, and why bother? You know, you can't have him. You know, why bother with those who came in second? But, you know, you get over things like that because you find people that excite you and encourage you and you find that there are other ways to associate, other ways to mate with people in your, not mating sexually, but mating as far as feeling that this person is a good balance for you. There are other ways to look at, you know, a different kind of balance. And as you get older, I think you can become a lot wiser. Not everybody does, but I think a lot of us become a lot wiser about what kind of balance we're looking for and what kind of mate we want.
Yeah, I remember it was difficult to know the difference because in the dream, you know, it seemed like we had gotten closure, but everything was good, and then waking up and realizing we weren't still together. But maybe on some level we did work things out, you know, and it was just a matter of interpreting it differently and realizing we worked it out on that level, but that doesn't mean we're going to be together in this realm.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you all said it well.
Okay, we have 5 minutes left, and you want to go to the next question, Carla? Okay, this is from Gemini Wolf. I've had somewhat dark thoughts as of late, and I've been driven more to watching horror films or clips, something I never would have done before. I guess it helps ground me. I'm not sure. I was wondering if my thoughts that I get are causing me some bad karma. This is from Gemini Wolf.
You want a chance at it? You haven't talked much.
Okay. I think you would have to have any particular thought a great deal. It would have to be a repetitive thought over a long period of time before it would ever have an effect upon your karma or your life in general, because even though thoughts are things, as Ra has said, you have to focus on them a good deal before they really begin to have an effect in your life. So I would look at this as something that is sort of like a phase of experience, an exploration, a little digression into something unusual just to see what it tastes like. It seems to me to be rather harmless and not something that one would really have to worry too much about. But if it's something that lasts over a long period of time, if it lasts more than a month or two, then you may be willing to start thinking about it as something that is focusing your attention so much that it could begin to intrude upon your reality and begin to have an effect there that maybe would be deleterious or maybe not, just depending upon how strongly you focused on the thoughts and how long.
Mm. It might help to think about what a thought form actually is. We can have vague thoughts, as Jim said, and have lots of vague thoughts and not really have them come to life. The thought form comes to life when that thought is as real to you as a real person. Plato and Aristotle and that lot talked about the world of ideal things where beauty and love and honesty and justice and all of those wonderful fourth density values had lives independent of any of us, because so many people had thought of them that they were real and that they were even more real than we were. The only way we could see them was as shadows from the wall of the cave. You know, the light, the fire would illuminate the walls of the cave, and we could see the shadow of these things that were outside the cave. And of course the cave represented basically our physical bodies and all of those things that limit us by not being able to get outside our human selves. But of course you can indeed get way outside of your physical self simply by moving into becoming a person who is a magical person, who has discipline to him or her, and who is able to control those thoughts and create changes in thoughts by intending to do those changes. So don't worry about the dark thoughts unless the dark thoughts feel to you like they're becoming as real to you as the person next to you on the bus or the next person you talk to.
Thank you, Carla. We are actually out of time, and we might want to actually, we have a question about thought forms, so we'll have to address that along with some others next week. And thank you. You guys have a great week. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Check out llresearch.org, the channeling website, archive website featuring channeling transcripts and lots of other good stuff, and bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org. We'll be here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Have a great week.
Don't know the hell.